Chapter 8. The Western Reaches of the Segmentum Pacificus. The Void. The Herald of Night came to the nothingness and found hordes. Instead of dark, there was the flare of engines, the flash of launches and guns, the streak of missiles. The orcs besieged a point where there should have been emptiness. There was a single planet in the starless night. It was a rocky mass, so cold its atmosphere was frozen, sullen snow. But the orcs had brought heat to the world. Their bombardment melted nitrogen and methane. It pounded the surface to a molten orange, as if the greenskins sought to turn the world into a flowing, liquid hell. But the world resisted. It remained solid, and the target of the orcs' hatred struck back.
"Lance fire from the surface!" said Adnakiel.
He pointed to a spike of icons on a Pict screen and looked around the Tacticarium table at the Death Watch and the Inquisitors.
"You were right," he said. "By the throne, I don't think I can credit it even now, but I congratulate you. We have found our myths."
"At war," said Thane. "The orcs have found them too, before us."
"They wasted no time," said Straton.
"No," said Adnakiel. "These are not the orcs we saw over Valtus. The ships are different. The fleet is larger."
He paused, his eye caught by a change on the Pict screen to the left of the table. He grunted.
"Cannon fire from the surface now, too. And the orcs have just lost an escort vessel."
"Impressive."
"But insufficient," Thane said.
Adnakiel nodded.
"There are heat signatures of landing craft. The greenskins are attacking on the surface as well."
He frowned.
"What I do not understand is if they already knew the location of the Sisters of Silence, what interest did they have in Valtus?"
"Fear," said Veritas, "or something very like it. The orcs sense the threat the Sisters of Silence represent. They seek to destroy all trace of them."
He pointed to the center of the Tacticarium table. The hololithic display of the planet had an illuminated target. Its coordinates marked the focus of the orbital bombardment and the orc landings and the origin of the surface fire. The Herald of Night was yet too distant for the Orspec's array to form an image of the fortress itself, but the citadel was there, its existence confirmed by the conflict.
"The orcs cannot know that this is the one place in the galaxy where the Sisters of Silence may be found. They must attack every trace of them they find."
Warfist bared his teeth.
"If this is true, so much the better. The thought of orcs feeling threatened cheers me enormously."
"It proves the importance of our mission," Thane said. He examined the relative positions of the strike cruiser and the orc fleet.
"What is your evaluation?" he asked Adnakiel. "Worse than Valtus. This orc fleet is not much larger, but that one was already large enough. There are no planets to use as cover for our approach. The orcs will see us coming if they have not already detected our presence. If we fight..."
He stopped for a moment.
"No one doubts your skill or the strength of your ship," said Thane.
"I hope no one doubts my intelligence either," Adnakiel replied.
"The numbers and the forces are what they are. We can fight. We cannot win."
"We have not come all this way for a pointless sacrifice," said Warfist.
Adnakiel gave the Space Wolf a curt nod.
"Quite," he said.
"Then our attack must be in two stages," said Thane. "We must neutralize the fleet before we engage with the orcs' planet side."
"Obviously," said Venand. "But what is the plan to do that?"
Thane had no illusions about the situation. He could see many ways for it to end in disaster, and knew there were many more he had not imagined. Even so, his lips pressed into a taut smile.
"I thought it was clear," he told Venand. "We are going to destroy an orc fleet."
"The Herald of Night?"
"No. The Death Watch."
5 space marines and a single boarding torpedo came for the fleet. The launch of the torpedo, from the limit of its range, signaled the opening of a new front for the orcs, though they did not know it. Abathar steered at an angle away from the Herald of Night, putting distance between the torpedo and its source. The Death Watch streaked through the void, a lone missile directed at a fleet, beneath notice as the greenskins poured their wrath on the world below them. The target was the largest of the battleships at the centre of the Ork formation. Thane watched the readout of the vessel grow on the torpedo's navigation picked screen. The representation began as a single point. It became an outline, then an ever more detailed schematic in red lines. Icons for possible attack points multiplied. "Have you chosen?" Thane asked. "Yes," said Abathur. His servo arm pointed at the screen to the junction of an immense engine block and the rest of the hull. The vessel narrowed slightly there. The battleship's construction was a brutal monumentalism, a welding together of the massive. But still there was a junction. The shielding in the hull would be thinner, and the location was close to the goal. "Good," Thane approved. "And the ship's position?" "Within an acceptable risk," Abathur said. "The defensive fire from the planet is pushing the Greenskins back. They are substantially further from the surface than the enemy over Vultus." "Far enough, then." "Within an acceptable risk," Abathur said again. They had no choice, Thane thought. There was no other way of dealing with the Ork fleet. What would be an unacceptable risk, he wondered. Nothing. The action was necessary. It was the only alternative to assured defeat. "Time?" he asked. 100 seconds, Abathur told him. Thane voxed at Nakiel. "We are about to make our attack," he said. "Very well. We will delay engagement until your signal, if possible. The Emperor protects." "The Emperor protects." Behind Thane, Forecast said, "We are establishing a precedent." Thane turned around. Forecast was looking at the teleport Homer on Abathur's back. "The means we are using," Forecast went on. "The tools. The weapons. You think we should not employ them to defeat the Orcs?" "The devices are impure," Forecast said. He used the word with the conviction of someone who is given to meditation on its meaning and implications. "Using them has a cost. We have seen that already." "They aren't made by Xenos hands," Thane reminded him, though images of the cratered Imperial Palace flashed before his mind's eye. "They are still productions of the Mechanicus. Their derivation is suspect." "Nevertheless," Straton put in, "they are authorized." "Even under the eyes of the Inquisition," said Warfist. He appeared to take sour enjoyment from the irony. Forecast gave a solemn nod, acknowledging the points. "Yet the fact remains, the technology originates with the Greenskins. The taint cannot be expunged through adaptation. We are conscious of its danger. We are using it in extremity. Would any of you wish this technology to have widespread adoption by Imperial forces, by all the chapters, by the Astra Militarum?" The others were silent, their faces grim. "No," said Thane. Forecast was right. Already they'd had ample reason to distrust the Ork-derived technology. Thane imagined the propagation of its use and realized he was picturing a plague. "There must be a balance," Forecast said. "I acknowledge the necessity that forces our hands today. Yet we must limit the moral harm."
"Restrict the use of such weapons to the Death Watch," said Straton.
We, the Death Watch. They were speaking as a unified force, Thane realized. And they were discussing situations that extended far beyond the current mission. He had agreed with Corland that the Death Watch was a temporary measure. In many ways it had to be. He knew his involvement was limited. His responsibilities as Chapter Master made it so. Nor could he imagine any of the Space Marines before him adopting the black livery permanently. They too would return to their chapters. And yet, we, the Death Watch, there was something permanent here.
50 seconds, Abathur said, recording Thane to the moment.
The boarding torpedo had no viewing blocks. The vid screens above the steering controls were Thane's only window onto the battlefield. He watched the columns of icons and coordinates change as Abathur aimed the torpedo at its target. The bombardment was intensifying. There were more and more landing ships descending to the surface. Damage runes were also appearing with greater frequency. The defenders of the starless world were exacting a price from the invaders. All of the Ork fire was directed at the planet. The Herald of Night had not been detected.
"The Emperor does protect," Thane said. "He does indeed. Brace for impact,
Abathar warned. Thane stood firm against the coming blow. The boarding torpedo hit the port side of the engine block's junction. Violent rattling shook the torpedo hull as the drill head ground its way through the immense barrier. There were no void shields. There was only a monstrous excess of metal between the Death Watch and their prey. The grinding went on for several minutes. Squad Gladius stood in a line before the hatch door, ready for the moment to storm out of the torpedo. Abathar's head was cocked, as if he were listening for nuances in the cries of iron agony.
We're nearly through, the Tech Marine said.
Thane lifted his bolter. The torpedo jerked forward, grinding air, then stopped. The hatch blew open. Squad Gladius charged out from below the drill head. The torpedo had broken through into a corridor running fore and aft. The battleship rang with the incessant beat of its bombardment. There was a group of orcs to the right, frozen in surprise. Gladius cut them down with a sustained burst of bolter fire, and the orcs died before they could react. The corridor was wide and high, yet it felt crowded by the tangle of enormous conduits that made up its ceiling. The walls on either side were an assembly of mismatched and misshapen iron slabs, held together by an exuberance of rivets the size of Thane's fist. Past the bodies of the orcs, the passage continued 100 meters into the engine block before it ended at a blast door. There were no other orcs in sight.
These seconds are ours, Thane said. Let us make good use of them.
The Death Watch moved swiftly down the hall, Abathar in the lead. The Tech Marine paused just short of the blast door.
A dreadnought could pass through that, Straton said.
I choose not to, Abathar said. He was looking at the conduits above his head.
A struggle for the Enginarium will not serve. Assuming it lies beyond that barrier, said Thane. The presence of a blast door in this location of the hull suggests it does.
Abathar took a step to his right. He pointed at the conduits.
So do these.
He was under the largest. It was nearly 3 meters wide. Water dripped from cracks and clumsy welds.
This one, he said.
His servo arm reached upwards. He used his plasma cutter to slice through the metal in a circle, while the rest of the squad trained guns down the corridor. A few seconds later, a large iron disc clattered to the deck. A stream of brown water poured down. A hot wind, foul with a mix of Xenos musk and burned fuel, blew from the gap.
Ventilation, he said, sounding both satisfied and offended. Ventilation and cooling. The Greenskin's conception of a machine is obscene.
Though powerful, Forkas said.
This is so.
To Thane, he said,
this will be my route.
Very well. We will keep their attention focused elsewhere.
Abathar took hold of the edge of the hole with the servo arm's claw. He pulled himself up until he could grasp the edge with his gauntlets and disappeared into the conduit, heading in the direction of the engine block.
Now the guns, Thane said. There was the long, booming thunder of another volley. The corridor shook. Warfist laughed.
They will not be difficult to find.
Abathar moved through the long darkness of the conduit, facing into a burning gale. He tasted the air through his rebreather grill, laden with particles of soot and unrefined promethium. He was conscious of how offensive this machine grotesquerie was to the Omnisire. He would make the destruction of this ship a worthy offering. The pipe stretched on and on. The wind grew stronger. He would find his goal at the source of the wind, he was sure of this. It was consistent with the paradox that was Orc machines. They were a confounding mix of inconceivably advanced technology and constructs so crude they should not have functioned at all. This conduit felt like it had been built by creatures who had heard of cooling and ventilation systems, but had no idea of how they actually worked. Yet on his back was a device that was an even more imperfect attempt to mimic technology far beyond the capabilities of the Imperium. The miraculous and the barbaric mixed with no reason, no order. It would be his privilege to erase it from existence. As the wind became stronger, so too was a sound that resembled the breathing of a gigantic beast. Close, Abathar thought, he was nearing the core of the ship's Enginarium. After another 30 meters, dim red light worked its way into the conduit. A bit further on, and the conduit became a nexus for dozens of pipes. There were now also many holes in the main conduit. Perhaps they were prepared for other shafts yet to be constructed. Perhaps they were intended to admit air from the chamber beyond. Whatever their purpose, they let in the pulsing, flickering red. Beyond the junction, fans spun. Abathar could see only a portion of one. Its blades must have been 30 meters long. Abathar crouched beside a circular grill in the floor of the conduit. Below him, in the red glow, incomprehensible machines clustered. They sparked, they smoked, they chittered at each other as if they were alive. Abathar waited. If there were orcs about, they had little reason to approach this particular configuration of machinery. He cut the grill free and dropped through. He landed in a nest of cables and shadows, a mire of technical perversity. It stretched for dozens of meters in every direction. The only illumination was the crimson, and Abathar turned around until he could see its origin. He was in a chamber large enough to contain the dome of Vultus several times over. In the far distance, a massive shape loomed, huge as myth. In its center, a grill opened and closed, revealing and concealing the crimson heart of power, a miniature red sun, enslaved and turned into the motive power for the ship. Many levels of catwalks ran along the walls of the chamber. Precarious spans stretched through the air to connect to the heart of the Enginarium and to other, lesser monoliths. Orcs swarmed along the catwalks, welding gaps, replacing cables, tending to control consoles bristling with levers that would have needed two mortals to pull. Power flashed at faulty junctions, incinerating orcs. Other greenskins were electrocuted by flailing cables. Their shrieks mixed with the braying laughter of their kin, who then moved to complete the lethal maintenance work, or die in their turn. Hordes of the dwarfish greenskins hauled the bodies away or dragged bundles of equipment at the command of their hulking masters. Abathar had landed on the top of one of the secondary power sources. He was 15 meters up from the floor of the Enginarium and 6 from the nearest catwalk. Heaps of tangled, meter-thick power cables sheltered him from sight. A few steps to his right, in the direction of the catwalk, was the base of an energy coil 10 meters high, which leaned out over the edge of the generator. The angry red power spiraled along its length. Yes, he could do what needed to be done. Here. Abathar removed the teleport homer from his back. He looked at the device differently than he had in the attack moon. Then he had been carrying untested technology, whose workings and morality were unclear. Now he saw the machine for what it truly was. It was a weapon, one whose use put more than its target at risk. He had said nothing during the debate on the boarding torpedo. He agreed with Forecast, though. There were weapons that should never be deployed, except by the Death Watch. They must be kept within the confines of that structure, belonging to none of the chapters, usable only in very specific circumstances. He distrusted the device, yet he would use it now for the Imperium, and in its destruction, remove its unclean being from the sight of the Omnissiah. Abathar moved towards the power coil. He was more exposed here, but the coil would have the energy concentration he required. The plan was not to teleport a moon this time. He did not have to tap into the full strength of the ship's engines. Even so, an enormous level of energy would be unleashed. He stayed low and in the shadows, a machine among machines. There was a serpent's nest of cables attached to the base of the coil. He scanned the radiation with the Auspex until he found the cables that were drawing power from the coil rather than feeding it. His servo arm claw yanked one after the other from the base. A warning klaxon sounded a harsh, animalistic braying across the Enginarium. Up and down the walls and the deck below, lightning flashed from wounded machines. Overloads and short circuits took more orcs by surprise. Greenskins shrieked and burned. Others roared with alarm and raced to regain control of the unraveling systems. Abathar's actions were having an impact. He was on borrowed time now. The orcs were seeking the source of the malfunctions. They would find him soon. He disconnected one more cable, then began the process of linking the teleport homer to the power coil. He was finishing the first connection when a trio of orcs ran down the catwalk toward his platform. They scrambled over the wall of cables and spotted Abathar where he crouched over the homer. They were just out of range of his plasma cutter. He trained his bolt gun on them and shot two into pieces before they could move. The sound of gunfire disappeared in the chaos of the klaxon and the booming beat of the engine. For a moment, Abathur thought he had gained another few seconds for his task. The third orc jumped from behind the falling bodies onto a cable heap, then launched itself at Abathur. He fired, catching the greenskin in the shoulder, knocking its flight to the left. The orc went over the side of the generator. Spraying blood, it tumbled end over end. It dropped 20 meters and landed head first, snapping its neck. But it howled a warning all the way down. Other orcs heard. They saw the fall. They shouted, pointing, and the alarm spread. From across the Enginarium, the orcs abandoned their stations. The horde closed in on Abathur. The rest of Squad Gladius followed the seismic pounding of the cannons. There was no time for stealth and no need for it. Thane wanted the orcs to know they were under attack, and he wanted them looking at the wrong threat. The Death Watch warriors tore through the halls and up the levels of the battleship at a run. Orcs fell before them, leaves in a storm. Gladius struck with such speed, no warning could be issued. The orcs were not prepared for battle on their own ship. Their weapons were sheathed, their guard was down. They died by the score. The Death Watch left a wake of shattered bodies and decks awash in Xenos blood. The cannons were two levels up from the boarding torpedo. The chamber was cavernous. Colossal guns, their barrels 6 meters in diameter, moved back and forth in the upper space above the Space Marines' heads, pistoning with each recoil. The blasts rang through Thane's bones. The chamber vibrated, blurring before Thane's eyes with the steady drumbeat of the bombardment. Beneath the monstrous cylinders, gunnery crews worked the controls. The stations were bulky, grotesque complexes spitting steam and sparks. The air roiled, thick with a stench of struggling bodies, ozone, and spent explosive. Thane, Straton, and Warfist charged the nearest crew. Through a gap between Thane and Straton, Forkas unleashed a storm of crimson lightning. The warp energy hit the greenskins and their controls with explosive fury, and both burned. Their station blew up, hurling shrapnel and fire across the chamber. Flames licked along cables and ignited pools of fuel. Black, choking smoke spread through the space, cutting visibility. The surviving crew turned on the rushing squad. Warfist reached them first. A greenskin managed a quick burst of its gun, the shells bouncing off the Space Wolf's armor, before Warfist impaled it through the eyes with his lightning claws. Then he was speeding towards the next position. Thane strafed the remaining orcs with bolter fire, while Straton climbed the ruin of the controls up articulated scaffolding. He affixed a melter bomb to the cannon, then dropped down. Thane and Forkas had already moved on, catching up with Warfist. The Death Watch used speed against the orcs. The surprise of the attack, the explosion of the station and the spreading fire, had them off balance. Their retaliation was clumsy. They rushed and missed. Speed, precision, purpose. Four Space Marines charged hundreds of orcs, and the orcs were on the defensive. Thane and Forkas provided covering fire for Warfist as he closed with the second position. He gutted the orcs that blocked his path and jumped onto the scaffolding. Straton added his bolter fire to the hail, holding down the crew until Warfist had placed his melter bomb. Then Warfist leapt away from the cannon and joined Straton and Forkas in giving Thane the cover he needed to sabotage the third cannon. Forkas lit up the chamber with more bolts of warp energy, spreading fires and ripping orcs apart with eldritch lightning. But now he avoided destroying the controls. Bolter fire, too, no longer hit the stations. His bomb in place, Thane jumped down from the scaffolding. The rush had stopped. There were more cannons ahead, but the orcs had rallied. The crews clustered around the next station. They were a barrier of rage, and their gunfire had the volume now to be effective. "Well enough?" Warfist asked. "Well enough," said Thane. The Death Watch retreated. The Space Marines laid down bursts of bolter fire behind them, but that was the lure. The true weapon was speed. The orcs pursued, perceiving triumph as their enemy fled. The orcs were fast, but the shells slamming into their bodies slowed their charge. The gun crews wore no armor, and the mass reactive ammunition shredded their bodies. For the first several seconds of the chase, the orcs died faster than they could charge. Then their numbers told, and they advanced on the wings of hate. as Thane had planned. The orcs reclaimed the gunnery stations on the run. Crews resumed firing while the larger body continued the pursuit. This, too, was as it should be. Thane brought up the rear, looking back, waiting for the moment. It came when the third cannon, having recoiled after its shot, moved outward once again. The second cannon was crewed once more and about to roar back to life.
"Now!"
Thane yelled. He pulled the trigger on his detonator. A moment later, so did Warfist. Incandescence lit the chamber. First one, then the other melter bomb detonated, burning through the barrels of the cannons. First one, then the other gun fired just as the integrity of the barrel was destroyed. First one, then another monstrous shell exploded inside the weapons. The cannons flew apart. Thunder, so huge it had physical force, slammed the orcs down. Shrapnel, like jagged storm shields, flew through the chamber. Flame engulfed the space. And now, Straighten triggered his bomb, too. The cataclysm smashed into the weakened first cannon. The barrel fell. It smashed down behind the Death Watch, a wall 6 meters high. Thane lost sight of the other Space Marines. He ran through fire. The world was fire, and the world disintegrated. The deck whiplashed. He flew through the fire, the world of fire. He landed on collapsing metal. He kept his feet and ran on. To the rear, the explosions continued. Destruction spread, feeding greedily. Another cannon erupted, and deeper in the hull, a shell was triggered by the impacts of the blasts. It set more off. The battleship groaned as a chain reaction tore apart the interior of its port side. Thane passed through the entrance of the gun chamber. The flames reached ahead of him, but he could see the rest of the Death Watch now, and he could see the stairs leading back down the levels, back towards Abathar. A great thunder resounded. An earthquake shook the battleship, hurling orcs from catwalks. One of the connections to the teleport Homer broke free. The cable slashed back and forth, spraying lightning. Abathar seized it with a servo arm claw. He struggled to reattach it and finish the rest of the assembly. The tremors became even more violent, knocking many of the greenskins off their feet, slowing their attack. Some managed to cling to the side of the generator and climb up to his position. Bestial faces came over the edge just as he was closing the last of the circuits. Without releasing his work, he turned the plasma cutter on them. The power coil wavered back and forth, metal groaned, the crimson energy flickered, then steadied. The explosions continued. Abathar had the sense of the battleship suffering wounds at a profound level. Had it been an Imperial ship, its machine spirit would have been screaming. Abathar grunted with satisfaction. "Well done, brothers," he thought. He finished his work, and the Homer began to charge. The red glow spread over its cylinders. Abathar turned from his work, in time to put bolt shells into the skulls of 3 more orcs climbing the generator. On the deck, the greenskins had found their feet. Not all of them were trying to reach him now. The blast doors on all levels of the Enginarium were grinding down. Streams of orcs flowed through them, rushing to fight the true threat, or so they thought. "Gladius," Abathar voxed, "it is time we departed." "On our way," Thane replied. "What is our best approach?" Abathar looked up at the conduit that had brought him here. Though new fissures had appeared in its surface, it still appeared sound. "The way I came. We won't be alone. Understood?" He gunned down a couple of orcs running across the catwalk towards him. Bullets smacked against his armor and dug into the cabling around him. Some greenskins had chosen to shoot from positions atop other generators. He moved closer to the catwalk, drawing their fire away from the power coil and the teleport Homer. He had to save orc technology from being damaged by its creators. He stood tall, weathering the hits, placing his return fire carefully, pulping skulls at a distance. The mercy was that the orcs laboring in the Enginarium were not the largest or most heavily armed warriors. They were here because they were forced to be by their stronger brothers. Outnumbered scores to one, Abathar held his ground. The Homer charged. The ship's tremors began to diminish. Abathar sensed time running out. "Gladius," he began, about to urge haste. He didn't finish. On the deck below, time ran out. A monster strode through the blast door. It was twice the height of a dreadnought. Its armor was so thick it seemed to be wearing the hull of a land raider. It carried a gun larger than an autocannon.
Gladius, Abathar said again, there is no more time. Hold fast, Thane replied.
Abathar moved to his right, behind the wall of cables once more, further away from the power coil. He braced himself to fight the unstoppable. The behemoth pulled the trigger. Its gun spat a thudding barrage of solid slugs. They smashed through generator walls and cut through cables. They set off a string of explosions and fires, a line of destruction marking the arc of the monster's aim. The beast brought the gun up towards Abathar's position. It was indiscriminate in its fire. It did not care what it destroyed. It reveled in the mad joy of devastation. The conduit above Abathar shook with the tread of heavy boots and the concussion of bolt of fire. Abathar aimed his bolt pistol at the orc's skull. He targeted the gap in the armor where the tusked jaw snarled. He fired. The shells smashed the orc's fangs. They punched into the back of its throat. It barely noticed. The monster's cannon shells pounded the cable barrier apart. Massive blows struck Abathar in the chest and threw him backwards. He fell in a tangle of wreckage, his armor cracked, servo motors slipping and stuttering. The other four members of Squad Gladius dropped out of the conduit. They fired back into it. The pipe trembled from the weight of the pursuing horde. It began to sag. Abathar pushed himself to his feet. The giant orc had paused to examine its handiwork. Abathar forced movement into his legs and made for the teleport Homer.
It must be now, he said.
The Death Watch gathered around the Homer. Orcs poured from the conduit. The giant aimed its gun at the power coil. It fired again as Abathar triggered the Homer. And then there truly was no more time.